Hey everyone, my name is Mick Toomey, and welcome to this episode of Rising Stars. Today, we've got, as always, my co-host, Jessica Assefa, and today we also have joining us David Shapiro. And David Shapiro is the SVP and GM of Health Plans for Press Ganey. And for those of you who don't know you, David, you want to take a second and do a quick intro?
Sure. Thanks, Mick. Thanks, Jessica, for having me today. Today, at Press Ganey, I run our health plan business unit, but my entire career has really been all around how to truly understand consumers and then ultimately leverage both data, quant and qual, actually, as well as technology, truly to improve the ultimate consumer experience. I actually spent 18 years at United Healthcare, leading member experience, about 12 of them inside the Medicare space. Inside of those 12 years, really focused a lot on stars, very familiar with both of you, obviously. And then the other 6 years at an enterprise level, really looking across all lines of business, as well as focused on provider experience. I've now been with Press Ganey for 3 years. And to be completely honest, one of the reasons I came here was because the power of their data and the power of the technology and the opportunities to really create reports just like the state of health plans. So I'm excited to share some of the thoughts, and I'm glad both of you got a preview into the report that's coming out here soon, and we can chat a little bit about it today.
I'm looking forward to chatting a bit about it today. If you think about, here we are in mid-April, right? And a lot of these rules just got finalized. There's a lot of change happening in terms of stars math, right? It's a very different way of looking at the numbers at this point. And as you said, we had the opportunity of going through this report, taking a look at some of the insights that are available here. Frankly, I got my eyes opened on a few of these things, and so I'm interested to kind of dive in on anything. But Jessica, you want to kick off on some of the ones that you thought were interesting at the beginning?
Yeah, happy to. First of all, talking about member experience and caps and the like is not new for us in the star space, right? It's a big part of where we focus and aim our strategies to hit star goals. But what I really love about the state of the MX report is it's not just that myopic MCAPS view. It's really just that holistic view across the nation and across product lines. Telling us what our members are experiencing, where are the synergies, and where are the differences between product lines. So it's a really great view that way, and backed, of course, to your point, David, by Press Ganey data, right? So we're not just guessing what we think members are experiencing. We've got the data points through PG to prove that. So I know the three of us have been chatting, looking through the report and chatting about what we found interesting and where we had questions. There are a few areas that I found interesting that I thought you might be able to enlighten us on a little bit, David, where I had questions. You said something that had really stuck with me. I think the phrase you used was access doesn't actually mean availability. And I found that interesting. I was wondering if you could unpack that a little and maybe what you're seeing in the data that brought you to that conclusion.
This one was a really interesting one for me, and it sort of, as I start to uncover the data more and more, because we talk about access all the time, it's like this big, broad word. And often in health plans, you think about access, you think about, coverage, you think about, is my physician, is my specialist, in network? And what I thought was so interesting in the data is like, the coverage can look strong on paper. The physicians, the specialists, maybe really good that you've got a ton in your network, but so much of what access really is, can I actually get to the appointment when I actually want to get to the appointment? That is really the heart of what's, inside of this data. We do a lot of different types of studies around access, and that's a great thing about this, about the Press Ganey reports and the state of, is we can look at lots of different angles of this. I'll just give you an example. We do a lot for Marketplace, specifically inside our market, and we have numerous different clients where we do studies for them. And actually 58% of, people, basically said that they can get into appointment within 15 days. I think CMS usually will talk about the benchmark being somewhere around 90%. I think the best health plan that we cover, everybody actually only performed at the 87% mark. And so, you know, you see this access issue, and it starts, you know, you'll probably ask me a couple questions about this, because there's a bunch of things I start to think about how plans can really start to improve this space.
Yeah, I love that. And that's the truth, right? And so much perception there too, which is hard to get around when you're developing improvement strategies. What actually is an appropriate time frame, you know, per CMS, or an acceptable time frame to be able to access a provider, and what is the member expecting around?
I think that point of expecting, I think expectations is really the key thing here. And we see it with some of our clients. In fact, some of our clients now are really measuring the difference between, you know, what the member expected and what the member actually got, and realizing that that's a really, you know, key metric to hone in on. You know, things like, you know, around this access, you know, we talk to a lot of clients about, you know, weekends and Saturdays and late evenings. Right. You know, often people talk about 10 and 15 days. I mean, the reality is we see more of 7 days being the real mark of, you know, when people have expectation, at least 7 days for a primary care physician, obviously a specialist being a lot longer. And we see the kind of connection between that kind of data and, you know, and star ratings and other performance related, you know, metrics.
How important do you think this is overall in experience? Like, do you see this really being access and availability really being a differentiator between high and low performing plans?
It shows up in our data that it is. You know, I've always thought and seen in data for many years now that you know, just the ability to find a provider has such an impact on overall NPS and satisfaction. So you sort of can connect NPS scores, satisfaction directly to access. And we see that, you know, this is a really critical area that plans absolutely need to focus attention on. And obviously in your space around stars, you know, getting needed care, getting care quickly, are just two really, really important measures. And we see the direct connection between, you know, it isn't just about, you know, is my doctor a network? It really starts to lean into, you know, am I able to see the provider that I'm interested in seeing in the time frame that I believe is the right time frame?
And, you know, when you hit on that, you're starting to touch on something that I thought was really interesting to me. In fact, I remember right after the acquisition, you started sharing insights about this and kind of blew me away. And so I started talking about it to all the plans that we work with. But I saw it in this report, and I think it's really interesting, especially given the changes that we're seeing with the stars math, right? You're seeing all of these ops measures going away, which means every other measure, you know, means that much more to your overall score. And so anything we can do to start driving improvement there, especially on, you know, some of the survey measures where historically it's not as easy to pinpoint exactly what you need to do. I was really interested in the correlation that your team had found between the PX data and the MX data. I'll give you the example that I kind of pulled out. And it was a 1% improvement in provider accessibility, the PX measure, produces a 1.6 point lift in getting needed care. And the reason, like, I thought that was really profound is CAHPS, as a general rule, let's not talk about off cycle, but, you know, you're getting that data once a year. But the PX data, you're getting on a much more regular basis. And it seemed to me that if you're actually able to link these, you're finding a way to almost create like a numerator denominator kind of a feel for CAHPS measures, to where you can actually, you know, make changes, track things. Are you getting into dangerous territory? Almost kind of a early warning system for this. So maybe talk to me about what you guys found here. I just thought it was very interesting.
Yeah, I'm glad you went here because this is something that came out of the actually the 2024 State of MX report that we produced, and it was probably the most enlightening thing that I found in the data because as a CX leader inside of a health plan, I'll be honest, I'm not sure that I really thought that much about the experience inside of the actual office visit. And what I've seen inside the data is that, and the obvious, the patient is the member is the patient, they're the exact same people, and they don't necessarily disconnect those two through their entire care journey. And this one, in looking at the data, just continues to surprise me, even though I feel like it shouldn't. I mean, the reality is a bad doctor visit equals a bad perception of the health plan, unfortunately. They are connected, but there's so much more inside the data. So let me just go back a little bit and just so everyone has context to this, Mick, because we talk a lot about health plan data, but when we, this is the power of Prescani again that gets me super excited about integrating data and looking at things from multiple different angles. Because, as you mentioned, one of the bread and butters of what we do is, on the patient experience side of Prescani, every single time an encounter comes, through, we're sending out a survey, asking about the actual experience inside of the visit. And that may be a hospital visit, that may be a, emergency room visit, for the A lot of what we looked at specifically in integrating the visit is really medical practice visits. And so what we're able to do, and specifically in your space of STARS, is we're able to look at, all the data on the regulatory and all the simulation data that we have from all the health plans. And then we're able to look at all the information, all the relationships that we have with patient or with health systems out in the country, and then we're able to connect that data. And so you can imagine that somebody took a patient experience survey through our patient experience system, and then we're then looking in the next 6 or 12 months, did you actually take a simulation Medicare cap survey? Did you actually take a regulatory survey? And are we able to look down to the individual level and be able to connect those individuals and be like, okay, somebody who rated me poorly on the exact question that you just said. So somebody who rated me poorly on a patient survey around, a contacting question, you can see a direct correlation to the getting needed care question. And I don't know. I mean, maybe you can bring up, and I'm just gonna look a little bit to the side here. Maybe you can bring up slide 8 because I know we had some slides ready to talk about this. But on slide 8, we actually show this specifically as, and this is a real client example. And you talk about, early warning system. But what you can see is, the line that's going through is really the patient experience score, right? Which is all around. This one happens to be ease of scheduling appointments. And so, as the ease of scheduling appointments is going down, you literally have a direct connection the next year that you're actually seeing your regulatory surveys, where this, the Medicare caps question of getting needed care goes down. And then it continues to go down, and later on, you see it going down. So, what's really unique about this, and that we're talking with a lot of clients and building a lot of this, is you really can start to create this as an early warning system. And if you just go, a couple more interesting slides here, and some of these are in there directly. This one's actually in the report on slide 9 here. But this one is where we're actually connecting down to the member level, and we're looking, often people, and I never thought much about this, to be honest. We don't talk a lot about the patient's visit and their concern for privacy or their protection around safety. But as you can see in this data, those that scored, a health plan in the those that scored and got a in this example 93.9 you know, top box score specifically around concern for privacy, on average, they were, you know, those members actually in those plans were a 1 to 3 star. But now you lift that almost by an entire point, and that becomes, you know, that specific concern for privacy, you end up going to a 4 star. Now you lift it up one more point, and it's actually getting you to a 5 star. So, like, why aren't you really focused on concern for privacy inside of the patient visit? Because as you can see, you know, in this data, it's directly connected to how people are actually scoring, you know, rating of healthcare quality, which is the metric, which is the Medicare CAHPS, you know, survey. So those are some examples, and I'll go to the next one. And this is, you know, the specific example that you gave me, but I'm actually going to point to the one on the right-hand side of the screen. Which, you know, on page 10, just for following along here, you talked about a 1% lift in, you know, in ease of contacting relating to a 1.6 lift in getting the care. Yeah. You know, I often find that it's really hard to create things that are really connected to care coordination. And, you know, likely because there's many questions, you know, inside of care coordination. And you know that often creates more difficulty to, you know, that care coordination composite and really creating some correlations. But when you take all the composite questions around care providers, on average, you actually a 1% lift on the care provider actually ends up with a 1.5 point lift in the Medicare care coordination. And what's unique in this is what these dots on the screen, you know, in this graph are showing, or these are actual contracts. And so when, as contracts, you know, if a contract in the upper right-hand corner scored high in one area, then it increased, you know, as well in Medicare CAHPS. If it scored low, it decreased in Medicare CAHPS. So there's a direct connection between these two. And it's just interesting to, you know, see how this is really all connected.
Well, I just think it's interesting to be able to take this relatively consistent, constant stream of inputs and be able to utilize it, to learn from it, to help build your strategy essentially around it to impact these measures that, again, haven't been, it's not like breast cancer screening where you can go get this done and, you know, you're correct. You know, this, it actually gives you guidance and gives you things to kind of base it all off of.
And not only that, like, as a STARS strategist, I always struggled historically, whether in a health plan or in consultancies, with bringing health plan CAHPS data to providers in an effort to get them to move the needle or an effort to show them where the greatest opportunity lies. It's meaningless to them, right? They're like, these aren't my patients. How do I know that these are my patients? And when you don't have a provider's confidence in the data you're bringing forward to make a point, like, everything's built off of that, right, off the data. So I love the idea at Prestgeny of being able to bring a provider's own data to them. Like, this is your data, you can't question it, right? Here's your own data, and here's how it correlates, how it's spilling over into the health plan data. Not only do you have their attention all of a sudden, and is it super meaningful and real, got really real quick, but it allows you a venue by which to tie member experience metrics into value-based contracting, which is something everyone and their brother's trying to do. And I emphasize trying, because without real data points like this, it's very hard to successfully pull that off.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the nice part is being able to see some of these connections. I mean, the heavy lift is you just identified as, you know, how do you create, how do you look at making sure that you're partnering with providers, looking at the same data? You know, how do you then work with the right sort of providers to improve, you know, the specific metrics? You know, if the PX metric is staff work together that has a strong correlation to, you know, a quick care coordination question, right? How, you know, making sure that you can't ask every provider's office, every system, you know, may behave a slightly differently. So, you know, how do you go in and make sure that, you know, this system is prioritizing, you know, improvements in one area, maybe different system, which is struggling in a different area around privacy or safety, and you're focused on that. So, you know, being able to, you know, I talk a lot about that, just the you know, the importance of the relationship between, you know, the health plan and the provider system, and the sharing of data and the connecting it to VBC contracting, all the likes. You know, it just becomes so important to ultimately improve, you know, again, in this star space, really improve, you know, CAHPS performance, as so many of these CAHPS questions are really, you know, patient satisfaction related.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, should we stay on the topic of access or?
Run, wherever
we
you
can
go.
Go anywhere you want.
Run with
maybe,
it?
Well, you know, I'll tell you one of the things that I think is, you know, interesting just this year is we do some just general market intelligence stuff into the market. And we've really looked at just the amount of disruption that has occurred for, you know, so many members, you know, going into from 2025 into 2026. I'm sure, I mean, you've worked with tons of health plans. I'm sure you hear it, you feel it, you see it. Yeah. You're hearing plans talk about it a lot. I'm just, you know, I thought it was interesting to just kind of take a step back. I'm wondering if you know, any thoughts that you came away with, just, you know, some of the data that was in there. I'll jump straight to some of the data points in there.
Yeah, would love to jump to the data points. You know, as we were, the three of us kind of reviewing that report together earlier this week, it's putting the data to what we're seeing in the headlines a lot in the way of member disruption, right? We're seeing, you know, as we were talking about all those, the bigger plans kind of struggling financially, and as a result, pulling out of these non-profitable counties, which result in those members just spilling into the plans that remain in those counties that may have been struggling as well, right? And if the bigger players pulled out, it's because these members are challenging members to begin with, right? And they couldn't meet the need. Now on top of that, they're pulling into smaller plans with less resources and shallower pockets and et cetera, et cetera. And that weren't prepared to take them in. It's like a surprise enrollment. We talk about force mitigation. It's on the other end, it's surprise enrollment, right? And not always a good surprise. So they're not staffed up. The call centers aren't staffed up. The clinical teams, et cetera, the infrastructure may not be set up appropriately to take in these folks. And there hasn't been that learning curve. Like when you study and intentionally grow and you design benefits based on the member demographic that you know you're bringing in, that's not always set up right. And I wonder, you know, how lack of ability to meet the need from even a call center perspective or to meet the healthcare need from a benefit structure perspective might negatively impact member experience and stars.
You know, when you were talking about that, I don't think there's been a more important time to think about onboarding strategies. And I know first year members aren't necessarily included into the, you know, star ratings, but you know, they don't change. That first year experience will impact them for years to come. I've seen it in the data for, you know, myself many times. And so I do believe right now, I mean, to your point, there are so many, you know, there are many different kinds of changers. In fact, in this report, we specifically call out something called forced switchers. And you can think of forced switchers as people, to your point, that, you know, yes, they had, you know, their market exits, as you talked about, you know, the employer made decisions to leave or product was discontinued. And I think there was more disruption and volatility in the market than typically. But I also start to think about forced switchers. And in fact, in the report, we talk about them in three separate categories. You know, that first category I was just talking about was really coverage driven switchers. The other categories, you know, are really, you know, going back to the topic of access, right? You know, I've been with my plan, maybe my network, you know, my doctor's no longer in network, my drug's no longer in network, not on the formulary, you know, and those are people that just feel like they can no longer be in the plan because they don't, you know, have the right sort of, you know, access to care that they really desire. And then there's, you know, cost-driven switchers. And those cost ones are obviously, those are the affordability challenges, premiums increasing, benefit redesign challenges, formulary drug prices going up, tiers shifting on the formulary, all those kinds of things. And I think about all those people, right? In fact, in our data, we showed 30% of consumers actually changed plans. And 41% actually experienced some sort of change. In fact, when I was playing with the data originally, I think, you could actually, depending on how you cut the data, I think it was really up to 50%, had some sort of change that, impacted them. Now, you can argue not necessarily all negative changes, but that's mm-hmm. that's a lot of members going through a lot of change there's going to be a lot of questions, right? That first, that first fill, right? Setting up for mail order on the drug side. The first time that they're trying to, assign a PCP, right. You could imagine, whether it be delays in care, whether it be, certain needs unmet, there's many challenges that come along. And, I start to think about what are all the metrics that you can start creating to really understand this population of, whether it be for switchers or mm-hmm. really this broader 50% of people that really changed to start to understand, are you there for them at that moment that really matters inside of their experience? And what are you doing to make sure that they've got to, that they really understand how the plan and the benefits support them?
I couldn't agree more. I think that's where having a report like this too, David, is just so useful and helpful in the hands of star leaders within plans too, just to be able to educate the frontline staff, right? That it's enough for us to know it and put it into workbooks as strategies and maybe provider communications or member communications, but how much time do we actually take making sure that our customer service agents, our care managers, even our vendor partners who a member views as us, as the health plan, are aware of what's going on in the Medicare Advantage landscape and the impact that has at the plan level, at the individual human level, right? And that's a big miss if plans don't have the information to be able to do that.
Yeah. There was one other thing that I thought I'd bring up because I think we talked about this in a little bit of our prep for this conversation, but I think one of the more interesting tidbits that came out was that 25% of highly satisfied members still did not renew. Now, obviously, some of those of that percentage are for switchers, obviously, that didn't have a choice, but there's a good percent, and it starts to, we were chatting about, it starts to make you think about, you're always focused on the people that aren't happy, but there's this whole population that are happy, but mm-hmm. are still willing to look and ultimately renew with a different plan.
Yeah, I think you even mentioned engaged, like how engaged they were. They're utilizing services, they're part of the health plan, they're involved, they're engaged members. And you're right, it seems so counterintuitive. Those are the folks we figure okay, set that bucket aside and now let's find the dissatisfied bucket to dig into, the disengaged folks. So I wonder if part of that is even just in this super competitive environment and in this environment where growth isn't really a strategy for those that are trying to grow. I mean, those are the members they're going after, right? Your engaged members and your highly satisfied members and your stars numerator hit members, right? Retention of these folks is going to be even more important as part of an overall Medicare Advantage strategy, more so than it has been historically.
Yeah.
You're talking about the engaged members and mm-hmm. There's an index that David will be able to talk about more effectively than I will, but the healthcare engagement index. And when I think about, again, stars and the way the world is changing, they're one of the categories in this index is, or two of them are engaged and disengaged. And there was a stat that I read in the report that, again, with everything, you think about the changes that have happened to stars. So CMS's numbers say, all right, 65-63% of plans didn't lose a star rating with this, right? It's accurate. But the way we're looking at it is scores, not just ratings. And if you look at it that way, 89% of contracts are going to see their scores decline, no performance change at all, with the star 29 changes coming in, right? And so, as we talked about, every measure matters. But I think plans are always going to be looking, especially right now, looking for ways, how do we drive improvement? How do we drive improvement on higher weighted measures? The thing that jumped out at me with this engaged versus disengaged was relative to the improving, maintaining mental health. There was a stat that you had in the report that said essentially disengaged members are four times as likely to rate that their mental health declined in the past year than an engaged member. And you think about that. Now I'm going to back up and down to just math for a second, right? So again, this is the
Nick doing math.
You can't help yourself. Yeah, right?
I can't help myself. So you look at this. This is a three-weight Haas measure. And disengage, again, four times more likely to say that they've declined. So that's a really negative impact. If you can turn that around, in some degree, if you're able to bump that up, to move more people from the disengage to the engage, get a positive reaction there, maybe that, converts to a higher star rating on that. And with the new math, that'll add about 6 points, a little over 6 points to your overall score. But then that kind of double dip effect, if that also coincides with a change in the Part C QI rating, again, at three weights, it's going to have a big influence on that. That'll kick your score up like over 9 points. So if those two things happen together, you're able to achieve a higher star rating and an improved QI rating. That's 15 points from just that one measure change. And so I personally think that there's going to be a lot of interest in digging in to those details and really working, like, how do we move a member from, from disengaged along the spectrum ultimately to engaged? I just think there's so much power in that.
Yeah, spent quite a bit of time looking at the data around engagement and the differences and the behaviors of those that are engaged versus unengaged now or disengaged. There are two people in the middle there. So it's, I think about it, just for context for everybody, we have a model basically that, we're scoring people on their level of engagement. And the personas are really broken up into categories of, engaged, involved, reactive, and disengaged. And it's those four buckets that we start to, bounce all these data points against based on who's taking the survey that allows us to really understand characteristics of the engaged versus the unengaged. I mean, I think off the top of my head, I think it was like 17% of people, said that their, mental health was poor of the disengaged versus 1% that said it was, engaged. And so there's lots of ways to look at this, but what I think is really important, for at least the way I think about it, once again, having sat in the shoes of many people trying to improve star ratings, is you really need to, understand segments of populations, personas. Yeah. We picked engaged because we fundamentally believe that there's some real strength and some real differences, between each of those characteristics, which may ultimately allow, our clients ways to get in and try different strategies of, how to move the needle on those people. I mean, in fact, on the number that you talked about, four times more likely, while that may be true, what may be, what's going to be really hard is to really move those disengaged people, obviously. So like, is it better to focus? Again, it kind of goes from, up the scale of, people rating themselves from 1 year to the next. And so maybe it's the reactive people that you're trying to get to be more, you know, engaged, or it's the involved people that you're trying to get more engaged. But having different strategies and targeting different populations that ultimately you're trying to move, I think is, you know, something that all plans should really, really be thinking about. But, you know, we, like I said, you know, we've used that engagement index as just a real powerful way to just understand these populations and help our clients begin to, you know, maybe understand different strategies on, you know, to try as you're, you know, to the point of maybe it's the disengaged need to get into a navigator program, and it's the involved that you really just need to, you know, somehow communicate some, you know, different messaging to, you know, through, you know, certain channels, you know, whether it be your call center, you know, somewhere else. So, it's about trying those things. And then obviously it's about measuring those things and seeing improvement over time, that become really, really important.
And what a meaningful way. I mean, for those who watch these podcasts looking for a thing to go back and do within your health plan, what a meaningful thing to go back and do, right? When we start stratifying and segmenting off our populations and into buckets and cohorts, maybe starting with take a look at it that way, engaged versus disengaged. And then for each of those groups, how many denominators do they fall in across the STAR schema outside of that? And how many are numerator and non-numerator compliant? And what are the unique member demographic attributes we see of each, right? This is what starts to really inform meaningful strategy, I think. Things that aren't just boil the ocean type initiatives, but that really apply the right intervention to the right subset of members at the right time to give that measure lift.
I mean, the reality is, and I get it, you know, plans don't have all the money in the world to start all these, you know, programs and initiatives to right. outreach and, you know, et cetera. And it's about finding that right audience that you have the highest probability to really move to, and getting those to move. And, you know, yes, I've got, you know, in a lot of the modeling that, you know, I think, you know, health plans do, you know, you should always be looking at them in deciles. And, you know, here I'm showing them in four buckets, but in, you know, maybe even get them narrower and looking at the scoring in deciles, and you're really starting to target which of those deciles really are the ones that allow you to, you know, that you get the biggest movement from, because you can't outreach to, you know, you can't outreach to 25%, but maybe you can outreach to 10 or 15% of the members from a cost perspective. And, or maybe it's testing certain things all along the way. And those are the things I often think about, you know, when I'm thinking about how do I really change behaviors, that, you know, ultimately plans are trying to do when they're improving, you know, STAR ratings. So.
And do we have an option not to, is the other question, right? That's like, so 100% the direction this administration is moving towards, right? The hard measures, they're taking away our easy buttons, and they're bringing in measures. I think like that new depression screening follow-up is a perfect example of a measure CMS has added to the schema that measures exactly what you and Mick are talking about, David, is did members that screen positive for a depression screening, right, using a proper tool, did they get follow-up? Did they engage with the healthcare? So here you've got someone with an identified behavioral health issue, and we're measuring engagement in treatment thereafter. So well, if you're not moving in that direction, best start.
You know, you know, we've probably covered most of the things in this, you know, at least the core areas in this report, but there is, and we touched on it or around it, you know, mm-hmm. is the behavioral health section. And you just mentioned a new measure, obviously, coming into the STAR ratings. But, you know, when we look at behavioral health, you know, that is a pivotal place that I think plans just need to be looking at, you know, on what their strategies are and, you know, how they're integrating them into really the holistic, you know, healthcare journey and connecting data, et cetera. We see the same, you know, first of all, you know, it's obviously known that, you know, since COVID, you know, the utilization of mental health issues are probably up 20 to 30%, I think is somewhere where it's at. And, you know, we see the same sort, we talked about access issues earlier, we see the same sort of access issues. You know, in fact, going back to that marketplace report on behavioral health, it's even lower than primary care, which I think it was at, you know, 56%, you know, are within 10 days. In fact, in a different, we also do something called, you know, the ECHO, which is an HRQ, you know, managed, you know, quality report, but now it's OPMH, outpatient health. You know, in that report, we see 36% report difficulty getting the counseling that they actually need. Mm-hmm. So there's this access issue. So the follow up is an interesting one. Like I thought about it a lot. Like, okay, so they get in there the first time, they start to manage it, but the follow up, you know, can get in there right. again, and, or does it become an access issue again? And how are we managing that over time? What's also fascinating in the report is like, once you get in and you've got somebody that you're really being managed by, you know, all the things like, you know, did they listen to the, did they show me respect? You know, the overall satisfaction with the care that they mm-hmm. actually received was actually higher than 90% on that ECHO, you know, on that ECHO survey, but yet, you know, the ability to get, you know, the counseling that they needed, you know, 36% said they struggled with it. So just a lot of opportunity that I think is interesting. And I had one more stat that I thought was interesting so we do a lot of provider satisfaction surveys as well. And we ask, you know, as you know, people may be, providers, PCPs may be referring to behavioral health specialists, et cetera. And we ask a question like, you know, does this health plan, you know, have an adequate network for behavioral health? You know, providers said basically, you know, when rating the health plan on average across all health plans, only 26% of health plans actually have, you know, adequate, you know, network of provider, you know, support. So there's, you know, even the provider system is feeling that, you know, they're struggling with, you know, the health plan, at least demonstrating that there is a network that they can gain access to. So I think it is a really, really, you're seeing it in many spaces, you know, CMS leaning into it. And I think behavioral health, if it's not a core part of your overall STAR strategy, you know, as a work stream to some extent, and identifying what you're doing around it, I truly believe it needs to be.
Well, and I think that, you know, that's a lot of the power of what this report does. You know, I think there's no shortage of data, you know, in at health plans, right? But the power of turning that data into insights that you can actually take action on, mm-hmm. I think that's really where the power is. You know, I think today, you know, I think it's been interesting going through and touching on all the details and all the insights that you guys did uncover in this report. But as a way to maybe wrap here as a gift to the health plans out there, what should plans be doing, you know, right now at this point, what are the things that they could be doing right now to take advantage of some of the insights that you guys gleaned in this report?
Yeah. So I'll probably narrow down to like four or five things. First, I guess I'd say, you know, going back to the access issue, like how are you measuring really availability? Are you measuring consumer expectations against reality? You know, what is the metric that you're going to really understand? That would be number one. The second is, you know, how are you measuring that patient experience? How are you partnering with providers to improve that patient experience? There's lots of ways to start to connect the patient and the member data. And if people have questions, happy to help talk a little bit more about that. But, you know, to really lean in that space because it's more connected than you realize. The third probably is going back to that healthcare engagement index and just like what's, you know, how are you using your data to identify specific populations to really target and have the right sort of engagement plan against the populations that you're truly trying to move the needle, whether it be on behavioral health or something else. I guess I'll toss two more. You know, we talked about satisfied members. You know, you often don't have strategies to retain satisfied members. I probably say, you know, have you thought about it? You know, maybe there's an opportunity to look at that. And then last, I just go just a lot of disruption. Really, you know, really focus in on your onboarding strategy. I think it's, to be honest, I think onboarding strategies are more important than ever. So hopefully kind of aligned to some of the things we talked about today, but those would be where I'd probably land on the immediate actions.
Yeah, those are great.
There's your calendar year 2026 CAPS work plan tab right there.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, I love the report as like a framework, you know, to help us all think in, you know, different ways, look at things through different angles. So it's fantastic. Truly, thank you for the time, David, to go through this with us. I really appreciate it. Jessica, thank you as always for the time. And if you want a copy of this report, feel free to message any of us. We'll make sure that you get something. So thanks.
Well,
everybody.
Thanks for having me, Mick.
Great
and
conversation.
Jessica. Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Bye.
Yep.